Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hultgren, along with Nick Bailing in this week to talk about... Well, it's funny, Nick, because every time I sit down to do this show, I feel like the intros are the same. Like, I didn't think anything was going to happen this week. And then everything happens this week. And all of it kind of overshadows, in my mind, the fight we have this weekend. And an amazing fight between TJ Dillashaw and Dominic Cruz, right? But on top of that, we have to talk today about Ronda Rousey bowing out of UFC 200. We can talk about CM Punk being rated higher than Marvin Kampman in a video game. We can also talk about UFC 197, which looks to me to be bigger than UFC 200. I mean, let's start there. Your thoughts on UFC 197, which, of course, if you missed the news, is going to be Holly Holm and Miesha Tate, and then Conor McGregor, who is bypassing Frankie Edgar and going straight to Rafael Dos Anjos.
Is that like a thing that we're allowed? Like, so is he going to retain his title is the question in the 145 division?
Well, what I had seen from Dana White is that at first he was going to have to vacate it because, you know, as Ken and I were talking about in the last couple of weeks, that we really feel that you should have to defend it first before you do that. If you're following the BJ Penn storyline, BJ Penn had done that. You know, he floated between both, but he had fought anybody and everybody. You want to fight at 170? Fine. You want to fight at 155? Fine. But he had defended, historically speaking, had defended first before he started floating around and doing whatever he wanted to do. And we both felt, and I don't know how you felt, but we both felt that he probably should do Frankie or Jose first and then go ahead and do this. Like, we kind of thought this would be UFC 200.
A lot of times, to me, it's once you've cleared out your division, that's when you can start jumping around and still saying, but I'm going to keep the one behind me as well. Right now, it looks like I'm thinking that it's actually because of the IV ban and the cuts at how hard it is on him that he wants to get up there. And once he gets up there with that muscle mass, going back down is going to be something that's going to be, I think, tough.
So he said last night that he's going to essentially decapitate Rafael Dos Anjos. And to me, I feel that while Rafael Dos Anjos is not the sexiest marketing tool in the UFC toolbox, he is, just like Conor McGregor, continually counted out. Absolutely continually counted out. And to me, I've been talking on Twitter with a bunch of people. This is, make no mistakes about it, I think this is a tougher test and a tougher fight than Jose Aldo was for Conor McGregor.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, for one, hasn't he tried to say he's going to decapitate every single person he's fought so far?
Fair enough. He likes the Highlander. We get it. Okay.
Right. Yeah, but with Dos Anjos, I think what can happen with that is if he loses that fight, I don't think it's as big of a deal for Conor. He just goes back down to his division and
with
says,
his belt.
With his belt that he still has and he still fights for it. Even if he loses it, now there's another storyline about how he's going to go down to his natural division and then fight there.
But, I'm still not 100% sure that Rafael's going to win this fight. I just think for all the people on Twitter that as soon as it was announced were like, Conor's going to beat him in 13 seconds, I don't think you're watching Rafael Dos Anjos' fights. Like, let's remember that Rafael Dos Anjos made Donald Cerrone go to a different weight class to get away from him.
It's just, I mean, he's brutal and he's
brutal.
Understated in his brutality. I think maybe because outside of it, he's so nice, but then he's not talking as much trash as everybody else is. And he genuinely seems like a nice guy. I've never met him, but he seems like he's going to like a family man and doing that. And so I think he's got that scowl on his face that he's always walking around with, but then he's got this big smile behind it. And I think that's why he's counted out as somebody that could be, a win. I say he wins that. I'm going to go against Conor in this one.
And we'll have to see that at UFC 197. The other fight on that one is we finally get Holly Holm back in action as she takes on, what again, to mirror what we just said a second ago, what I think is going to be a much tougher fight than Ronda Rousey. I think Miesha Tate is a really bad matchup for Holly Holm. That's not to say Holly can't beat her. I just think it's a really bad matchup.
I think when we start looking at Holly Holm, what we need to do is look at her previous fights. She's an incredible boxer. She's an incredible mixed martial artist. She's awesome at everything she does, and she has the wonderful Greg Jackson behind her and all of her game planning. But I think you see more of what she has done in her past than she does in the Ronda Rousey fight. I think the Ronda Rousey fight was the perfect one for her, and so I think every person she fights, she's in a fight. It's not like the Ronda thing where it's, oh, well, who's she going to beat next? It's, wow, that's a fight. Right. That's something to look for.
And I don't know that you want to be in a fight with Miesha Tate.
No, and Miesha Tate is one of those things where she's, everywhere she goes, she's well qualified. Where Ronda has her tricks, and she's so much better at those that it looked like she was impenetrable, and then all of a sudden, when you figure out where she's actually struggling, it's very much exposed, and I don't see that with Miesha.
And let me clarify so that both you know and everybody listening to this know, I'm not saying that Miesha Tate's striking is as good as Holly Holm's striking, but I'm here to tell you that in everywhere else, I think she's better than Holly Holm.
Well, that's the well-qualified part of it. She can do every single one of those things. I mean, she even stood in there with Ronda against her best, and she went to the ground with her. She rolled with her. I mean, it took her out after a while, but she was in there with her doing the things at a world-class level with Ronda. I think she can be in there with a world-class level of striking with Holly and then do what she needs to get done.
Which moves us to the other announcement this week that Ronda Rousey is no longer competing at UFC 200. She needs more, quote-unquote, time off.
You mean like swimsuit issue? Shoots and premieres and
look, and as we said last week, I'm not taking anything away from that stuff, but let's be honest, she's going to do all those things that she has not slowed down one iota since this loss. I mean, she slowed down to the point that she needed to heal up in order to do these things, do these movies, do these shoots, but she hasn't stopped any of it. So she has never said this, Dana said this, if all of those things were the distraction that led to the loss of Holly Holm, she has made zero changes in them, which doesn't surprise me that she then bowed out of UFC 200 because she's got a ton. I think it's 3, if not 4 movies this year, plus the photo shoot that you just alluded to, along with rumor is she's going back to WrestleMania because The Rock's going back to WrestleMania. So her dance card is full of things that are not UFC related.
That's exactly what I'd be doing if I had those opportunities.
Of course you would. I mean, I know it's one of your favorite things. Look at Brennan Schaub, right? The fighter and the kid, they had a huge year this year, and he didn't have to get punched in the head and is making more money.
Well, yeah, and you got to look at what Ronda's look. Most people get back in the ring as fast as they possibly can because they have to, because that's where their income is coming in. Ronda is more of a, I mean, don't get me wrong, she's making plenty of money in the UFC, but that's the showcase to get her onto the rest of the part, like everything else she does. So if she goes in and loses again, that's not good. If she takes this next year and just makes as much money as she can doing everything else that she possibly can and then goes and fights again, I think that's the best thing for her.
Or never fights again. I mean, as you're seeing, she's in 3 or 4 movies. She's still doing the swimsuit was booked after the fight, so it's not like it tarnished her marketability in any way, shape, or form. And so if you could make a living and a much better living not being punched in the head continually, who wouldn't want to do that? And maybe after a while, she decides that she doesn't want to come back. And maybe after a while, she decides, as she's alluded to a couple times and certainly did last year, that she wants to be a WWE diva. Now, that time on the road, you know, is way more brutal than what she's used to. But she would probably get the Brock Lesnar schedule, I'm guessing, and not have to and show up 6 times a year. But you could do that and not get punched in the head either. That's not to say that being a professional wrestler is easy or easier, but it's different.
It's different, and it's under her schedule, and then at the end of the day, she knows what's going to be happening at the end of the WrestleMania. She knows that if it's a badass look that she needs to have, she's going to have that if that's what they want her to have.
Sure, for sure. So those are the things that came out, and then I just want to talk about this briefly because I'm not sure if it's ridiculous or I'm just not sure. So screenshots have been leaking about this new EA game, and fans of the UFC or pundits of the UFC have long been criticizing this game because unlike or much like the NCAA games, right, all those kids that are in the NCAA games don't get a nickel from EA NCAA. The fighters in the UFC game have signed over their likeness to fight in the UFC, so they don't get a nickel from said video game. So some people are like, look, I'm not going to get this game because it doesn't actually put money in these people's pockets. When you add in the Reebok deal and all the other crazy things that have happened, it just seems like it's hand over fist. Money is going in the wrong direction, in my opinion, if I'm a fan of Fighter X. So I'm not going to do that. That said, it comes out in March, so you're seeing more gameplay footage and you're seeing screenshots. And one of the screenshots that have come out is that CM Punk is rated 85 in the game, which puts him in the upper echelon of the video game world in EA 2. To put it in comparison, he's rated the same as Martin Kampman, who's recently retired, but Martin Kampman and he are rated about the same. And why people are irritated, of course, is CM Punk has never fought. He's been injured 3 times in the last 12 months trying to do this fight. They're doing a reality show right now on Fight Pass called Looking for a Fight, for where they're looking for his opponent. And that opponent they're looking for is tailor-made, I dare say, tomato can-esque, so that it gets a good look, so all of this invested money ends up coming back to them. I don't know that you should be super angry about the video game, but it does, to me, set a precedent of what they're going to do with this guy, right, wrong, or indifferent, or even if he's earned it.
I mean, part of the fantasy of the video game is being able to be your favorite people and favorite person, and then fight as that person. It's the reason why you buy a WWE game. It's why you buy a UFC game.
Sure.
So if you are hoping that WWE people buy the game to be
right
CM Punk one more time, you right don't want him to be the guy that falls over every time there's a faint jab thrown at him.
Yes, but to me, and I understand obviously the marketing behind this, and I understand that I don't know if he's in it or not. I haven't seen a whole roster. I understand that if you put Brock Lesnar in it, you rate him at a 90. I understand the reasons why you do all those things. However, this is different, and there was a mention on the Facebook page about, well, it's no different than creating the Nick Bailing fighter and wanting him to be a 90 and beat Conor McGregor. Well, it's sort of different because the Nick Bailing fantasy is just that. It's fantasy. It's a silo in that game to allow you to do something that you couldn't actually do in real life. Escapism, if you will. If you want to be taken seriously as a real sport versus the WWE, I think there might be some consideration to ranking a fighter that has never actually done it higher than a highly qualified Dutch kickboxer. That's just me. Now, you could do whatever you want. I see the marketability behind it, and I get all of that stuff. But there is a difference between the WWE games and certainly a difference between the create a wrestler, create a fighter, and even create a player when you're playing in the NFL. Right? They don't every year, they don't put the San Diego Chicken on the Chicago Bears because they think it's going to make people buy Madden, right? They don't do that. You'd have to make him yourself because they want the game to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you put if CM Punk, maybe he hasn't fought yet, so maybe he is an 84, and when he comes out, he's going
are
to...
Are you for real right now?
Yeah, I mean, Duke has been working really hard with him lately, and, you know, he's dropping down to a weight class that's better for him, and he's working through all these injuries, and, you know, I bet you his striking is probably at, like, a 90, his grappling at a, I'm going to guess, a 73, probably...
Are you endorsed by Duke Rufus and or CM Punk right now? I mean, and I only bring this up not because I'm actually super angry about it, but I bring it up not even, to be honest with you, not even because he hasn't fought. We've already gone through why they put him in there. I bring it up because you don't actually know if he's going to fight. He hasn't, you know, he's stepped up to so close to the starting line. Oh, I'm injured. So close to my back. Oh, so close to, my shoulder. So you don't even know if he's going to get in it. And that's, I think, where people are having an issue with it. And CM Punk went on Twitter yesterday and was saying that we're all butthurt idiots that don't know anything about the sport, which is, again, his thing that he should be doing. But we still don't, you don't have a date. We don't have a card. We don't have an opponent. This is no different than when we make fun of Fedor fighting a guy who's 0-2 and beating him in 12 seconds and pretending that Fedor could beat King Mo on a Bellator card on Spike later on this year. That's just not a thing, right? Like, that's just not how this sport works.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking, like, what do they do? Like, where do they put his, like, skill set in that game? Does he maintain the same moves as he had when he was in the WWE? Like, they just bring that over from the other game?
I mean, look, I would love to win a fight with an Enziguri. I just don't know that you're going to see that in there, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his skill set will be. I just think it's an interesting way that they look at this other arm of the promotional practice of the UFC, and that they really, really, really want him to work. And I think part of the reason they really, really want him to work is, one, what you just said, Nick, they want to bring in the WWE fans that want to see Phil Brooks one more time. And two, they want to replicate Conor McGregor as many times over as they possibly can. So anybody who has some charisma, they, of course, want to shove everything they possibly can behind him. I just think you probably should have at least have a book, you know, a booked fight. Even if you haven't done the fight, at least have it on a piece of paper somewhere.
At least some video of him, like, hitting pads that you
can see. Like fighting an actual human being, not hitting pads.
Sure.
Like an actual fight. An actual fight. I just think you need to do that stuff. And I think that's why you're getting the faux internet outrage over the 85 rating of the game that people will still buy in droves, because that's what they do. Okay, this weekend, we've got some fun fights as TJ Dillashaw on Sunday night will take on Dominic Cruz. 20-1 Dominic Cruz to 12-2 TJ Dillashaw. There's been quite a bit of back and forth between the two, Dominic Cruz getting the better of all of it. And part of that started out with Dominic Cruz little brothering TJ Dillashaw. And TJ Dillashaw, you know, you and I, Nick, have talked about this off the show a lot. TJ Dillashaw just can't keep up. You know, it's varsity versus JV as far as verbal sparring. And I feel that once they get into the octagon, it's going to be that in physical sparring. I think Dominic Cruz is just going to have too many things to do to TJ Dillashaw.
I'm going to take the opposite stance on that one.
Well, that's why I brought you here.
Yeah, I'm going to take TJ. I think he's the new Dominic Cruz. And Dominic Cruz has been out for so long, and his movement is, you could say that Cruz pioneered that, but his movement was highly defensive to stay away. I think that TJ's is offensive, and it's to set up the finish, where Cruz is using it to either set up takedowns or defensively. You don't see him putting the pressure on somebody, except in his last fight when he came out and looked like a demon, so I might be wrong in that.
Well, I was just going to say, I wasn't even going to say that. I was just going to say that when, you know, as you're verbalizing this, what I'm seeing in my mind is the perfect storm for a counterpuncher. You know, if you've got a guy who's doing your style in the opposite direction, meaning if TJ's going to push the fight towards you and your skill set is receiving that and getting out of the way, it sets up for me very similar to what Conor McGregor was able to do to Jose Aldo. I'm not saying this goes down in 13 seconds. I just think that TJ Dillashaw's aggro has served him very well until you meet, in my opinion, and you and I can debate this for however long you want. That's the joy of a podcast. In my opinion, when you meet Ben Kenobi and you're Luke Skywalker, I think Ben Kenobi's got your number. I think he's been doing it longer, and he showed in the last fight when you said he came out like a demon that the ring rust wasn't really a thing. I think I'd be hard pressed to pick against Dominic Cruz in this scenario.
Well, I mean, I guess Dominic Cruz, he is his own like master splinter. He is his own Yoda, where I think that TJ Dillashaw without Ludwig is not the same fighter. And so it depends on who has. My coach always used to tell me everyone's plan A is to walk out and knock the guy out in 10 seconds.
Yes.
Right. If you don't have a plan B, you're going to be SOL real fast. And so I'm actually wondering what both of these guys' plan B looks like, because the fight is going to be in the footwork. And if the footwork ends up being an equal match, one of them is going to have to find an advantage somewhere. And I wouldn't be surprised if it pushed that all the way to a decision.
And that decision would not surprise me either. And if, you know, if we've seen anything in the last couple of weeks, we know that that's really bad for Dominic Cruz, because decisions never, ever, 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 ever favor the challenger. So he's going to want to finish this fight, and probably knows that he wants to finish this fight. And what we don't want to do, especially at this weight class, because it's on a Sunday night, so that will tell you how many people care about this, right? Is that they're putting it at a weird time on a weird network on a weird day for fights. That you're not going to get rematch after rematch after rematch. The reason I picked Dominic without hesitation is, you said it when you were talking about Conor McGregor, that you got to clear out the division before you start running around checking out other belts. TJ Dillashaw handily can clean out the division. So can Dominic Cruz. And so did Dominic Cruz, right? When Dominic Cruz got injured, there really was nobody to challenge him at all. So him being back and his first fight back, he looked amazing. And I just think he's got something to prove. And I think when you have that level of skill, and feel free to disagree with me, when you have that level of skill and you still maintain the athleticism, and you've got something to prove, because the dangerous part about him is he's got wisdom and hunger. Because when you've been doing it for a long time, maybe you get a little lazy, or maybe you just get a little bored with it all, or maybe you just don't want to do it anymore. Not that I would call GSP lazy, but clearly the game changed on him, and he got out when the time was to get out, right? The fighters changed on him. Dominic Cruz has taken essentially 2 years and some change off, but still remained pretty hungry to do this fight.
I think he's smart enough, too, to not just be continually taking damage in the gym during that time and, you yes. know, head trauma after head trauma. So, I mean, he's been around for a long time. I'd say that his toolbox is still growing. He's a smart fighter, and I don't think that he's going to be diminished by just taking shot after shot after shot in the gym. I'm just calling on this one that the changing of the guard, and being on Sunday, you know, you were saying about how many people care about it. If you don't care about it, like, I wouldn't be surprised if one of these guys figured out how to actually levitate. Like, their footwork is getting so high level that people don't even see it while they're watching yep. the fight, that they're going to eventually just be gliding across the ring like a bad video game where they never move their feet and there's some sort of glitch. And it's going to be a beautiful fight. Like, no matter what, I bet you there's going to be beauty in the violence of this one.
There certainly will be. The co-main event has huge implications, as well as Anthony Pettis is taking on Eddie Alvarez. And this is the year that Anthony Pettis has to prove where he belongs in that division, because after his loss to Dos Anjos, he really hasn't looked the same. And I think he's got to put his foot down and say that he's still there or still relevant, or he's very quickly going to become this year's Benson Henderson, in my opinion.
Well, with Pettis, he recently opened Pettis. He has his own gym now.
Yep.
Is that separate from Duke, or is he kind of doing the same thing that Cerrone did, where he has the ranch, but he's also a Greg Jackson guy?
I don't know the answer to that, though.
I'm not exactly sure either, but the question is, you know, Duke has always been the orchestrator behind his success, and if there's a separation there, I wouldn't see wouldn't be surprised seeing Pettis fall down the rankings. If he's still with Duke but he just wants to be doing his own thing financially, then it totally makes sense to me. And it's just a matter of, can Alvarez get to his hips and take him down and do the thing that when you watch Pettis lose, that's what happens to him.
Yeah, and it's not to say that Pettis certainly can't win this fight. I just think he has to win this fight. And Eddie Alvarez is one of those fighters who hasn't looked very great since he came over to the UFC. I mean, I think we all thought there was going to be a lot more to do with Eddie Alvarez, and he just hasn't really done that. The one thing he does do, though, is he stays in those fights. He's a guy that's very Robbie Lawler-esque in the fact that you really do have to put it on him to end that fight. And when you have a fighter like Eddie Alvarez who can hang around in round two or three, I think Pettis knows he's got to finish that fight. And to your point, if he's not, we don't know, because I can't really find if he's training or not training. If he's not training with Duke Rufus, that's always problematic. You've seen that every time somebody, you know, changes gyms, they lose a little bit of that spark. Like you said with Dillashaw, if Dillashaw's not with
Ludwig,
he's not the same fighter. If he's on his own, there's no discussion that Dominic Cruz is going to run right over him.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's Dillashaw's. Is this his first fight after leaving the Alpha Male guys?
Second.
It is?
Yeah, he had one other fight, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, that's you know, in question, too, of changing camps. Do you get a boost from that, or you see one or the other. You don't see someone just kind of maintaining the same path on a switch of a camp. And that's with Pettis and Alvarez. The whole fight, Pettis has historically needed space to complete what he's trying to do. He needs space. He needs to set it up. He needs movement. If Alvarez keeps the pressure on him, it's going to be a long night, and it's probably going to be pretty boring. If he is, if he's made adjustments and he knows what Alvarez is bringing to him and he's going to be getting that space, I think it's going to probably be lights out for Alvarez, and it's going to be a highlight reel.
And if he finishes, I think it's going to be a highlight reel. And if I had to pick right now, I would say, If Anthony Pettis is going to win this fight, it's going to be in round one, and it's going to be a highlight knockout. Other fight that could be highlight knockout is Travis Brown is back. He is taking on Meathead Matt Mitrione in the heavyweight division. not a lot on the line right here, other than I would say relevancy. There's far too much going on, you know, with number five and above for there to be any discussion of either of these two doing anything interesting right this very second. That's not to say that it can't change by the end of the year, but I would say right now you're fighting to just be somebody that people know is a successful fighter, because there's just far too much noise at, you know, between Stipe and Alistar and Verdum and Kane, that, and even JDS probably hanging around there all of the time. I just don't know that there's any indication that this is a relevant fight for anything other than, hey, you won your first fight of 2016.
This is the one of the most interesting fights on the card to me, because Travis Brown is hard to beat, period. He doesn't lose much. I mean, that's why he's up in the top 10, and this is a fight that's exciting to watch. But Mitrione, I would go ahead and say, is impossible to beat on the right night. It's just if you get him when he's on point, or if you get him when he's off in la-la land. And that's the question. Is I think Travis Brown can win if Mitrione isn't there. If Mitrione is there, I don't think he's a guy that gets beat.
Mitrione is one of those guys. You're hearing a lot of people right now talk about Conor McGregor and Conor McGregor's mind and how he talks to himself and tells himself that he's going to win and does a lot of visualization and really is strong in his mind, and that if you're going to beat him, this is what you're hearing a lot in the punditry in MMA. If you're going to beat Conor McGregor, you got to start there, and you've got to start there in the fight. You know, trash talking is not going to work on him. You're going to have to when he thinks he's going to be in a successful position, you have to make sure it's not a successful position, so you get him to start questioning himself. Matt Mitrione is the epitome of when that works, impossible to beat. When he's distracted or when he has doubt, he's very easy to walk right through. And so, yeah, this is a hard one to call, because you don't know which one's going to show up. Because if Matt Mitrione, I've told myself I'm going to win for 3 months, shows up, Travis Brown might have another Andrei Arlovsky night on his hands, which is not a good thing for him.
Yeah, and I mean, both of these guys, as far as heavyweights go, they move real smooth through the ring. It's going to be another fight, actually, that's going to be pretty slick to watch. You're going to be watching probably two of the more agile heavyweights fighting in these two guys. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets the upper hand. I'm always talking footwork. That's where the fight is won and lost for me. And it's I think Mitrione's balance, he's balanced more often than Travis Brown is. Travis Brown can make a lot of, I mean, he's proved it with Alistar throwing those up kicks, and he's got a little bit more flash and range on him. But I think that Mitrione is balanced more often when it comes to striking.
Other fight on the main card is going to be Ross Pearson taking on Francisco Trinaldo. That'll be a great fight. Patrick Cote is on the prelims fighting Ben Saunders. Tim Bosch and short fuse Ed Herman is back fighting Maximo Blanco. He's taking on undefeated Luke Sanders. When you get to the prelim on Fight Pass, they are, again, I think, Nick, making some really interesting moves in Fight Pass to make you want to watch these fights. Where it used to be 6 months ago, we would be making fun of, like, there's some idiot fighting on Fight Pass, so I guess if you want to watch it. But Paul Felder and Darren Cruikshank as the main event on Fight Pass, totally worth checking out Fight Pass. And I love this idea that we're now putting, and you saw it with the Dustin Poirier, Joe Duffy fight. It was the highest watched fight live on Fight Pass since the app launched. Why? Well, because you're putting things on there that people want to consume. And I'm all for this and having more things to watch. I understand why they're doing it. I question the Anderson Silva, Michael Bisping card only on Fight Pass, but if you want people to pay for Fight Pass, that's a fight that people are going to pay for. This prelim card, you now are getting five fights on Fight Pass on Sunday night, which is awesome. And I love the quote-unquote main event on Fight Pass. I think that's a great fight.
It's just one of those things where, you know, I didn't get Fight Pass. I got the free trial when it first started. Then they offered me a second free trial, and I got that. And when it started, you know, I'll go watch the fights that happen when they're free online somewhere later. Yep. But when this kind of fight, I mean, when I saw it at first, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would you put this on here? This is going to be fight of the night, if not, you know, the core main event is going to be fight of the night. And then I made sense, like, well, you know, get them on Fight Pass. You're giving me better and better reasons to get that. And, you know, it makes sense for actually these two because the fight makes sense for them, and they're both on a little bit of a losing streak here. So they have a lot to prove. So they're coming out guns a-blazing.
And well, a lot to prove, and they've been fun fighters to watch, right? They're not. It's not a lot to prove. You know, you're both on two-fight losing streaks, and you're terrible, which was predominantly what you were getting on Fight Pass. Now you've got two guys a lot on the line and have delivered in some really, really entertaining fights.
Yeah, I mean, as far as excitement level goes, the main card is pretty exciting for me, but then that fight is right up there with the main card for who I want to see and the fights that I want to see that night. The tough part about it is he is still on Fight Pass. That's 6 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. Like, I'm also doing other things at that time. I mean, I guess that one would probably end up airing at, like, 7.
But I think you're getting closer to getting people to tune into this product. And what I would love to see, which we're not there yet, and I know the licensing deals probably will prevent it, but what would be great is if the entire prelim was also available on Fight Pass. So by giving you $9, I have since bypassed the Fox Sports 1 need. You know, this card in particular is all on Fox Sports 1, so I get it. It's a bit of an outlier. But if we fast forward to 2 weeks from now when we're back on UFC on Fox, the prelims are going to be on Fox Sports 1. It would be nice if they also aired on Fight Pass so you could see them anywhere.
If that happened, I would 100% be a Fight Pass subscriber.
Of course you would.
I'm a cable cutter, so I can't get to the fight. So
as am I, right? So I'm with you. Like I've said this before, and this is not the place to talk about it, but I think we're 24 months away from that, of all sports being available however you want to consume them with some sort of subscription. And Fight Pass, if they're going to keep doing this, I think is really exciting because it's going to get people to pour into the app, and as more people pour into the app, you're getting more reasons to adapt the app, make the app better, add more content, so forth and so on. So the Cruikshank-Felder fight, I think, is amazing. A couple more things to talk about before we bounce. Nick Diaz is free. He was finally recused is not the the proper way to explain it. But on Tuesday, they settled with the Nevada Athletic Commission and came to a deal. His suspension, 18 months, his fine, $100,000, which puts him fighting as early as August 1st. So you won't get him at UFC 200, but soon after you could see him back in the octagon if he chooses to do that. But by and large, it's great news that they've fixed this and gotten him back on track.
Did that monetary amount change, or was it just the amount?
It's down $250,000. I think it was 350. It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
It was 350,000 or 500,000. I don't remember. It was a lot, but the 100,000 is way lower than it was.
Yeah, way lower. I mean, to anybody in the regular world, that still hurts the pocketbook, and
it
hurts him quite a bit. But 350,000, I mean, you're talking about a person's like house, like their livelihood, what they need to do to keep surviving.
Well, and that was probably, if not 60% of what he got for the Anderson fight, it was close. So yeah, they fixed that. It's $100,000. And then he can fight as early as August 1st. Also, I said this yesterday, that this is my shocked face. Yoel Romero has been notified that he might have popped for some sort of performance-enhancing drug. So we'll keep an eye on that story and see what happens. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to, you know, he's never been popped before as far as I know. But he was notified yesterday that he has a potential anti-doping agency policy violation stemming from an out of competition drug test prior to the fight.
I would really like to see if they're going to be doing this to stop with the potential, like telling the public about the potential. And it's just because then court of public opinion, he is. I mean, you already have everyone reacting on Twitter for something like
this. Well, of course. I mean, I'm doing it right now, right? Like, look at him. You've long been like, how is he that giant? And as soon as somebody even whispers it, hey, he might have popped. Oh, he's totally guilty. We're all guilty of just jumping on that and going, yep, see, told you, steroids.
I mean, I was accusing him before they even said that it was.
Of course, lots of people were asking those questions, but if you're asking those questions and then this comes up, you skip over the word potential,
right?
And we're already straight to he's guilty and who cares,
yeah.
Which is funny because not 3 seconds ago we were going, Nevada Athletic Commission, what a bunch of idiots. They finally fixed this Nick Diaz thing. And then we're like, thank God the Nevada Athletic Commission finally caught Yoel Romero. They're awesome at their job. So I understand the hypocrisy,
sure.
But he has been notified and we will see how this plays out. But I don't disagree with you. The idea of potential and releasing potential is exactly what happened to Nick Diaz. You know, he was busted for tests that he took in the UFC offices that were not admissible. He tested negative on two of the three tests that they gave him when they find, you know, all of those things show that, if not impropriety, there's a bit of heavy-handedness in their ability to either read tests or decide on what they're going to do with tests. So, yeah, potential is probably something that we shouldn't be seeing in the public eye, but I don't know how you stop it because we, you know, I'm looking at nine MMA sites right now who are all in the clickbait business who want you to click on the Yoel Romero steroid story. So how are they not going to put it up there?
And I don't know how the USADA, I think I got the acronym right.
You did, actually.
Yeah, I don't know how they work as far as releasing the information goes, but obviously this is part of what they do, and I don't know if it increases the investigation or, you know, where that gets released, but it's just, I mean, he didn't pass the eyeball test for me, and that's, you know, classically wrong for what I've always thought, and but now that he has this, I'm like, ah, yes, justified in what everybody else is thinking already.
And then the last one before we bounce for this week and get you ready for the fights. As always, you can follow on Twitter and Facebook searching WOW Show. BJ Penn. It might not be GSP, but we might get BJ Penn back again. He has been meeting with Greg Jackson. Greg Jackson very excited about said meetings. He said on Tuesday that they went very well. No specific plan in the works, but he might be interested, which I am not interested in.
No thanks.
I really would like to see these guys walk away and walk away with their head held high and not have to worry about these sorts of things. In his last fight with Nick Diaz, as we, you know, we're just talking about a second ago, I don't ever want to see that again. And that was Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz, who I think is a, you know, game competitor all the time. What happens if he gets in there with a guy like Rafael Dos Anjos? What happens if he gets in there with anybody at 170?
I mean, maybe in his mind, he's thinking a cleaner sport is better for him because he's going to be now competing on a level playing field.
Yep, because I'm sure when you think performance-enhancing drugs, you think Nick Diaz. And that was clearly what went wrong in that fight, is that Nick was roided out, and that's why he beat him.
I'm just saying mindset of where he could potentially be. He's always been the poster boy for against all of that stuff.
And so is GSP, but I don't think either one of those. It's a different world, man. It's a different, dangerous world of guys who are just on a different level. And I know the weight classes aren't the same, but if they were, what does BJ Penn do against TJ Dillashaw?
I don't know. I completely agree. I don't want BJ to come back. And even if this happened 5 years ago, maybe there's a run there, but I don't want to see it. I'm just putting my mind, you know, why he's thinking this is a good idea.
Okay, but like push that one step further. What's the weight class where that's a good idea? Is there anyone at 85 that you think's a cakewalk? Anybody at 70? You want to fight Johnny Hendricks? Tell me how that one's going to go.
I mean, he's
you want to fight Tony Ferguson at 155? Tell me how that one's going to go.
Hey, BJ's fought as high as 205.
Okay, put me at 205. Who at 205 is a cakewalk? You want to put him against Gustafson? Tell me how that one's going to go. Let's put him against Rumble Johnson. How is that one going to go?
At one point, they were in the same weight class, weren't they?
Who, Rumble and BJ?
170?
Yeah, at one point, yeah.
Yeah, so there
you
go.
But I mean, if they're both up at 205, I don't like that fight either.
Nah, I don't see anywhere.
And I don't think BJ's going to fight at 205, but I'm saying, and jump on Twitter, jump on our Facebook page, pick me any weight class from 45 to 205 and tell me which one of those fights looks exciting for BJ Penn, knowing that he's not going to fight anybody out of the top 10. He won't come back for that.
Phil Brooks.
Now we're talking. All right. Enjoy the fights this weekend. You can follow along on Twitter or Facebook, search WOW Show. Have a great weekend. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.